Hi everyone, and thanks for listening to the LID Radio podcast. I'm Morag, and today I'm joined by Michael Farmer to talk about his new book, Madison Avenue Revisited, The Verdict of the Advertising Industry, Murder, Not Manslaughter. Michael is a leading commentator, strategist, and analyst within the advertising industry. Prior to founding Farmer & Company in 1992, he worked as a strategy consultant with the Boston Consulting Group, later becoming a director at Bain & Company, leading Bain's Munich, Paris, and London offices during the company's European expansion. He's also the author of Madison Avenue Manslaughter, which challenged conventional thinking around the modern advertising industry and its business model. In Madison Avenue Revisited, Michael takes a deep and critical look at the dramatic changes that have reshaped the marketing and advertising landscape. The book explores how the media function within advertising evolved from a highly profitable and integrated part of agencies during the golden age of advertising into today's fragmented and increasingly complex system. It examines the economic pressures facing agencies, the impact of short-term shareholder thinking, and the growing influence of artificial intelligence on the future of media and advertising. The book also offers practical pathways for reform and transformation within the industry. So, Michael, thank you. It's lovely to have you here today on the LID Radio podcast. So I must first ask you, why did you decide to write Madison Avenue Revisited and come back to this conversation around the ad industry?
Well, that's a great question, and it was something that tormented me for a while. I originally wrote Madison Avenue Manslaughter 10 years ago, and then it went through two more editions, but it focused exclusively on creative agencies and all the untoward effects of their not keeping track of how much work they were doing and yet accepting fees from clients for an uncertain quantity of work. And that book did quite well, but I really have felt since the third edition in 2019 that I needed to do something that looked at the evolution of media, because where we stand today in the advertising industry is that the choices that advertisers make about how much to spend on media and where to spend it drives almost all of the decisions that creative agencies make. So I felt that I needed to take a look at the evolution of media from the time when it was mass market media to today's fragmented mess. And I started out writing a book that was to be called Madison Avenue Media Madness. But by the time I finished it and had a discussion with my good friends at LID, we decided to reposition the book and make it a revisitation of the industry.
If not anything, because the tongue twister would probably have us all in deep, deep trouble after all of that.
I think it's a better title.
Fantastic. But the title Madison Avenue Manslaughter is still very, very evocative. And we'll get into a little bit about this long tail of media and creative and where that money is going in a bit. But now, as a follow-up to Madison Avenue Manslaughter, what's that writing process like? How much has it all changed?
Well, since the 2019 third edition of the book, things have only gotten worse for both media agencies and creative agencies. Their main problem is that they do too much work for the fees that are paid to them by their clients. And as a result of that, they have been downsizing to make their margins. So they've been liquidating their talent in order to deal with pricing problems. And that has only gotten worse and worse. And when I started digging into the operations of media agencies, I discovered that they were making so little money from the time of their people that they were shifting that business to buying media cheap up front from Google and Meta and Amazon and a lot of others, and selling it very expensively to their client as a way of making a margin. And that's one of the big changes that has occurred in the media business which is a change in the business model. There are holding companies today that will give away their creative work in order to get their hands on the media operations, because it is so profitable for them to buy cheap at the beginning of the year and then sell it more expensively to their clients.
You mentioned there the selling of media, the buying of media cheap and then selling it on expensively, this lack of transparency, the fragmentation in the media and advertising landscape. How has it changed most dramatically over the last few decades? Why are these pricing models so out of kilter with what we need? I mean, not paying for talent, that seems mad to me.
I don't really understand the motivations of chief executives of agencies or holding companies who do not confront the fact that they've got a pricing problem. Too much work for too little money. And they face that by downsizing instead of trying to figure out how to be paid properly for the work they do. Now, of course, you know, the obvious solution is, well, document and measure the amount of work that you do and have a discussion with your clients about whether for the fees that they are paying, that's affordable for you. I don't think that type of analysis is that hard to do. I've been doing it for 30 years because I'm a consultant. Lurking in the background, though, is the problem that for the last 15 years, their clients have not been growing. You know, ever since the media landscape changed from mass market to fragmented marketing, the growth rate for brands stopped. Procter & Gamble, Nestle, Unilever, and Colgate, if you take them as a group of major advertisers, used to grow at 8% per year for 48 years, right up to 2008. And then when everyone started shifting to this low-cost media, their growth rate slowed down to 0.5% per year. And as a result of that, they went into full cost reduction mode and started cutting fees for their agency and using the cheapest media they could buy, which was this programmatic. I think in some ways, what we're seeing is an environment in which it's harder for big advertisers to grow. And they've responded to that by focusing on costs, which has had lots of negative knock-on effects for their agencies.
This conversation between efficiency and effectiveness, as you say, has been rumbling for a long time. And when we think about perhaps the idea of programmatic, the idea that you can track to the nth degree what your media is doing because it's digital. Is it short-term financial thinking? Have advertisers been led down a funnel into this minutiae which isn't helping their overall brand?
Well, there are a couple of things going on. I mean, that's a really good question, and it's probably the most central one. First of all, we have to look at the existing incentives for C-suite executives, whether they're in marketing, at the advertisers, or at the holding companies, or at the agencies themselves. You know, for a very long time, C-suite executives have been paid a lot of money when the share price grows. And the average remuneration for a chief executive of a Fortune 500 company is something like $27 million. And if that's driven by share price performance, then they're going to think an awful lot more about share price performance than they are about doing a great job for their clients, particularly if there are short-term things they can do to enhance their share price performance. So I think that remuneration problem leads them down the path of thinking about the quick things that they can do every quarter to make their numbers look good for Wall Street or the city. And I think that's cost reduction. That's number one. The second thing is that we have to remember that when programmatic advertising came in, the key beneficiaries were Google, Meta, Amazon, and a lot of other ad tech players who created the pipeline between the advertisers and agencies and the publishers. And, you know, most of the money goes to those folks. Well, as a result of that, they are promoting programmatic advertising. They are promoting the types of metrics like clicks. Look at the click performance you're getting as a way of demonstrating that it works. But clicks aren't sales. And if you look at the sales dimension from public data, it's very easy to look at. Sales aren't growing. There are lots of clicks. There are lots of ads that go viral. There's a lot of chatter about ads for at least 15 minutes or so when they hit big. But they're not driving sales. And I tend to believe that mass marketing was a more effective way of driving sales than this highly targeted advertising that we have that is even more interruptive. You know what it's like when you read any of the newspapers or any of the trade magazines or any magazines, you're just constantly having to skim over ad banners. It's very, very annoying. And nobody really has asked for it.
Technology and advertising, it seemed like it had so much promise. Yes, it could be granular. Yes, we could really delve into the data. It sounds like I already kind of have the answer, but do you think technical innovation has improved or weakened the industry overall?
I think it's weakened the industry. First of all, it has introduced a huge amount of complexity. As both advertisers and their agencies have shifted from sort of a very monolithic, mass advertising that existed in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s to the more fragmented thing today. And I think that the trying to master the technology of digital and social and channel fragmentation has completely distracted senior executives from their real mission, which is to generate growth for the people that they work for. You know, I think that if chief marketing officers are bragging that they have digitalized their operations and they're very highly digital and highly social and highly programmatic, what they're talking about is that they've been on a long journey to master the technology and get to a point where they can talk about it comfortably. On the other hand, they get fired every 3 years because they're not growing brands. So although that discussion about we're digitalizing and we've had a big success with that, that actually gets them their next job.
I had a very funny conversation with the CEO of what we might call a challenger brand very recently. And he said, but the one thing I very quickly learned in digital and e-commerce was it's about the fundamentals. It's not about click-throughs. It's about, did I grow my sales this month? It's about my margin this month.
Wonderful. I wish more thought about it. But, you know, I spend a lot of time talking to clients and potential clients and, you know, participants in the industry, and they don't have that perspective. In fact, here's part of the problem. If the growth stopped 15 years ago, then a lot of people that are actually at mid-level in agencies never had the experience of working in successful relationships that were growing. You know, they've worked in a time when it was a struggle. They've worked at a time when it was complex, in which they were back on their heels rather than leaning forward into accomplishing something. And I think that, you know, one of the benefits of being older as I am is that I've lived through so many different eras of technology, but for the bulk of my career, I was participating as a management consultant at a time when companies were growing and chief executives were thinking about the future. And today it's just completely different. It's am I going to make my budget this quarter?
Yeah.
And if not, what are we going to have to do? It looks like we're going to have to downsize or buy back shares or increase our dividends or do something of that sort, which is all completely fake. I mean, it's a way of making Wall Street and the city happy. But even Wall Street and the city are not looking at the basics. I would think they'd be very concerned about agencies that are liquidating their talent by downsizing every quarter. Now, since I've been in business, agencies have accepted that. Every year, the workload goes up a little bit. Every year, the fees come down, and they say, we can handle it. But over the 30-odd years that I've been doing that, that has meant the price of the work has gone down by 75%. If you accept those little changes for 30-odd years, you're in trouble. So you've got procurement and marketing not working as a team at all. One's growing and the other's shrinking. And then you've got the agencies, like the holding companies, who just pass the problem on to their agencies and say, well, your fees have come down. You're going to have to downsize. Instead of acting like consultants to them, saying, let's figure out how we can get paid for the growing workloads. They've ignored the growing workloads. They've just taken them, you know, on the chin. What they've responded to are the declining fees, which they've responded to by, you know, decreasing their staffs. So they've put enormous pressure on their agencies to do more work with fewer people. And the people that are left doing it are the inexpensive ones because they, you know, they've got rid of many expensive people. So I think that the holding companies have deliberately milked their agencies. I don't think that they have ever turned their attention to figuring out how to make them more effective with their clients. They've tried to make them more effective in new business development to replace the clients they've lost. And so I think the holding companies have murdered the agencies. And then I think the combination of marketing and procurement have also murdered their agencies through the, you know, the dysfunction of growing workloads and declining fees.
So now we get to this big behemoth, the two little words, the two little letters even. We get to these two little letters that say so little but mean so much, AI, artificial intelligence. I wonder if this may be the Rubicon. This may be the turning point, because while everyone is saying AI is now taking over tasks, it's making work even cheaper. However, it's a massively important part of advertising and media, but it takes over those low-level jobs. It does not take over the high-level strategic creative jobs, the expensive jobs you've just mentioned.
No, it doesn't. In fact, if you are a mid-level or a higher-level person, AI is the most fabulous tool in the world because you've got the experience to do the prompts properly. You've got the experience to evaluate the answers that you get. And you can turn Claude or ChatGPT or Gemini or any of the others to solving strategic problems for you. Not solving necessarily, but doing the research for you. The junior people who have less experience are probably more inclined to believe that anything that comes out of the mouth of an AI program is accurate. But let's face it, I looked at an agency recently that had about 80 creatives in its office. And it was doing 15,000 different ads, of which 13,000 were adaptations of 2,000 original pieces of work, mostly destined for programmatic purposes, done by junior people, of course, who were doing one a day of those things without any supervision. And they added up to 40% of the income of the agency. So now we've got the kids doing programmatic stuff, which is easy to do, but even easier to do with AI, which threatens up to 40% of the staff hours that, you know, provide the remuneration for creative agencies. Well, if now 87% of agencies claim that they are using AI, but they are not seeing their man hours cut yet because procurement hasn't really gotten around to doing that. So I think that what they're doing is they're using AI and not actually delivering the man hours that they're paid for, but they're fattening their margins. That'll work for a little while. Procurement people are now asking, what is the impact of AI on the staff hours that I'm paying for? And if you do that analysis, it's kind of scary.
And are we going to see a slow and perhaps painful recalibration of what is paid for, how it is measured, and who it's paid to?
Yes, and I'll tell you what's painful about it, Marag, is that in my long experience working with agencies, I have yet to find an agency, creative agency, that could tell me what work they were doing, client by client. It's not documented. It's not in any platform. It's not in Excel. It's not in PowerPoint. It's not in Word. If you don't know what work you're doing, you don't know how much of it is original work and how much of it is adaptation work. And, you know, AI is much more effective working with the adaptations. If you don't know that, then how are you going to deal with the threat? And if procurement takes a jump on the industry and says, you know, we're just going to cut the amount of money that we pay you for doing adaptations. We're going to assume you're using AI, so we're just going to cut it arbitrarily.
Yeah.
And that would have a devastating impact because right now the holding companies desperately need to show growth. They cannot afford to lose income. And yet they have done nothing throughout this entire evolution to ever document and measure their scopes of work. And that's the only thing I've ever specialized in because I knew I needed that data to be an effective consultant. But it's been a struggle for 30 years to work with agencies because they didn't have any documentation. So how are they going to deal with the AI threat if they don't even know what work they're doing?
So it would then seem sensible. And throughout your book, you're calling for reform within the industry. I mean, there has got to be a different way. The work is valuable. The work is strategic. The work is creative. You cannot get a brand new ad for Target, a brand new ad for John Lewis in the UK, which leads the Christmas ads. It's the totemic ad, the totemic creative throughout the year. You can't get quality work without paying for it. But clients need to know what they're paying for. What needs to change?
Well, let's go back to the problem that advertisers have that they're not growing. The first question they should be asking is, are we spending the right amount of money in the right media channels and filling those channels with the right type of creative? I don't see that exercise going on. So the fundamental question about the size and mix of scopes of work in media and creative, I don't think is being asked. I actually think that in some ways, chief marketing officers have accepted the fact that they're not growing and are responding to that problem by focusing on using the lowest cost every. Do we need to take those risks, which will disrupt the apple cart, but maybe lead to a better conclusion? And if so, then how do we work with our agencies to get there? We can't just ask them to execute the stuff that we give them at lowest cost. We should be asking them to participate with us as strategic partners in figuring out how we grow again.
So if there's going to be one thing that someone reading Madison Avenue Revisited will do when they turn that last page on the subway, on the airplane, put the book on the nightstand, what do you want them to do when they get into the office the next day?
Listen, in all three books that I've written and every podcast I've given, every article on Substack, every conversation I have, I want people to say, you're right. Now, people do say I'm right. I mean, about what I've written. I have had very little criticism of my data or my conclusions. But what they end up saying is, you're right. It's terrible, isn't it? No wonder our lives are so difficult. And it doesn't go beyond that to what are we going to do about it? What are the steps that we can take today? Now, I think the modest steps that agencies can take is get to grips with your workload, figure out what you're actually doing for clients, and form a judgment about whether that's going to help them grow brands or whether it's just going to help them keep their costs low. If this were a consulting assignment, you know, and an advertiser came to me in my old, when I was wearing my Bain & Company hat, and say, you know, we're not growing and we need an outside perspective on why we're not. It would probably come down to, you know, your media mix and your creative mix are inappropriate for the goals that you've set. They just have to ask different questions that are more leadership-like.
Michael, I could have many more questions for you. I feel like we could talk about this forever. It's such a fascinating topic, and it's in such turbulent times. But again, feels like the turbulent times have been going on for at least 15 years, if not more. Thank you so much for joining us on LID Radio Podcast.
Thank you for inviting me, and it's really been a pleasure.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us on this LID Radio Podcast. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media for LID Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on the LID Radio Podcast.